Loch Lomond and Trossachs National Park has a 220-mile boundary encompassing 720 square miles, which stretches from Balloch in the south to Tynedrum and Killin in the north, and from Callander in the east to Cowell in the west. Although Loch Lomond is the central feature, the national park contains another 21 larger lochs, with numerous smaller lochs and lochans, not to mention the many rivers and burns, mountains and hills, forests and woodlands throughout an area where more than 15,000 people live and which is very popular for recreational activities. Now, here to talk to me today is Gordon Watson, the Chief Executive of Loch Lomond and the Trossachs National Park, and Lee Hamilton, Ranger Manager for the park. And they're going to talk about not only the very important work they do to manage the park during the busy summer period, but also the fact that the park is consulting on a draft 5-year partnership plan, which aims to guide how all who have a role to play in it, looking after the area, will work together to manage the park and achieve a shared vision for this unique area.
So one of our busiest areas in the summer, part of Argyll and Bute is, and other areas, is Loch Lomond Trossachs National Park, and their chief exec Gordon Watson and Lee Hamilton, one of their wardens, is here to talk about what it's like managing things in the national park. And I know, Gordon, we try and work together as much as possible, but maybe we're sitting here on a really sunny day. This is a really busy weekend for you, I'm guessing.
Yeah, thanks, Pippa. We're obviously doing this on probably the best run of weather we've had in quite a long time. So obviously we're trying to, after the pandemic years where we obviously had big sort of pulses of visitors when people can travel again, trying to get to what does normal start to look like. So we've actually had quite a gentle start to the visitor season, as the weather maybe in the spring wasn't quite as good, but certainly now I would say we're absolutely in full swing, and obviously that means we've got all of our seasonal operations full throttle. So that's our ranger patrolling, visitor sites, campsites, and so on. So and as ever, it's great to see so many people out enjoying the good weather and enjoying the national park, and obviously supporting businesses as well.
So we should maybe so just for people that don't know, distinguish what's the boundary, roughly speaking, of the national park? Because you pick up one part of Argyll and Bute, and then it's probably confuses people what you guys do versus what we do, and maybe try and clear up some of that.
Sure. Okay. Well, yeah, it's pretty big, 720 square miles. So the far reaches are, we go as far north as Tynedrum, and the northeast as far north as Killin, obviously our biggest town, Callander, in the southeast. And then the west, beyond Loch Lomond, we obviously stretch into the top of Loch Long, and then round, including places like Loch Goyle, and then round and further into the Cowell area. We include Loch Eck and some of the coastal communities, just stopping short of Dunoon. It's a big old patch, and obviously the Argyll Council area, the Argyll and Stirling Council areas are the two biggest councils. It's a good opportunity because obviously National Park does a lot of things, but we don't do everything, and obviously a lot of it is working in partnership with particularly the local authorities and other partners. But obviously we run a lot of visitor services during the summer, but obviously we do a lot of working with landowners, particularly on now things like climate and nature projects, which are even more important than ever. We're the planning authority for the area. And as I say, we obviously run a number of really important, quite small, but really important visitor sites in some of the visitor busiest areas, so that we can help people enjoy the area and help manage some of the issues as well.
Yeah, and I suppose some of our busiest areas that we spend a lot of time talking about up West Loch Lomond side, and Luss, and Duck Bay, and some of those areas are hot spots for people where they first come out of Glasgow and hit the national park.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we're working on hard is the transport side of things, because I think again, it's great that more and more people want to come and enjoy the outdoors, but you know, the numbers of cars that we can accommodate in some of these areas is, it can only be, you know, so much. You can't be building more and more car parks. And for people to be able to visit the park more sustainably, and we were all trying to reduce emissions and car journeys and so on, we're really quite focused on looking at, you know, better rural transport and better transport in the season for you know, whether you're coming out of Glasgow or you're travelling from further afield, that there's actually some services that you can, you know, even if you're coming by car, you don't need to spend time by car. So it's quite a big thing for us at the moment, because, you know, the level of traffic, not so much people, but traffic is a big issue. And obviously the 82 is important for our Gael residents. And, you know, we all know what happens, especially when people are coming back, that the 82 gets pretty clogged up. So, you know, we've got to look at that.
No, I absolutely. You can see it on a good day with the tail back. Often, yeah. I'm going the other way, opposite from the tourists. So lucky to be, yeah, going that direction. But Lee, I should have properly described your title. So you're ranger manager. So you up your staff a good bit and work with volunteers just to try and make sure that influx of tourists is managed and that they're safe as well, isn't it? That's a big part of what you do.
Yeah, thanks, Pippa. I mean, it's a kind of a bit of a balancing act through the summer months, where you want to encourage people to come and connect with nature, but obviously ultimately you want them to have a really good experience but have a safe experience. So there's quite a lot of the time they are providing guidance and advice on things like responsible camping, responsible behaviour in outdoors, the Land Reform Act, fire safety, and also water safety, which has been very prevalent in the last few years particularly. So yeah, it's, I mean, the seasonal rangers, we couldn't do it without them, and we've been very lucky to have a cohort of seasonal rangers who have returned year after year, and that knowledge and experience is invaluable. So we are, this year we've been able to offer permanent seasonal contracts, which means we are very lucky to have that experience and knowledge coming back every year. That in the four key areas, which is West Loch Lomond, East Loch Lomond, Trossachs and Breadalbin, and the water itself on Loch Lomond, we've got a huge number of experienced rangers throughout the summer. So we take on, over the years, it's especially since COVID years were our sort of busiest for intake of seasonal staff, and we were right up at 52. But this year we're just between, it fluctuates the last 2 years between 35 and 40. So it's that gives us a full complement to get deployment patrols out in the key areas. And that's where, as Gordon said, you know, the key kind of crunch points of transport can affect us as well as visitors. So we have to really, you know, be tactical in our patrolling so that we get to the areas where we need to be, so that we can meet and greet and obviously share our experiences with them, and obviously allow them to go on and have a safe and enjoyable time in the national park.
Yeah, and I mean, water safety's had a lot of focus in recent years, but this time of year is probably the weather that we're seeing today. That's when people are kind of most likely to dash out and try and be near water or in water. But that has still massive risks. Even what seems like a hot day, it seems like the obvious thing, get in the water. But people still need to be really cautious, don't they?
Absolutely correct. And that's what we've been working with our partners now for a number of years. Even before COVID years, where we saw a lot more people staying at home, the rangers have been providing water safety advice at the Duncan Mills Memorial Slipway before they go out on the water. We've also been part of a programme called Experiential Learning with schools in Western Bartonshire for a number of years, over 15 years, trying to be more preventative. And that is actually ramped up over the last few years. So through the winter months, we've worked with partners to ensure that signage is adequate, worked with our comms department to make sure that signage is very impactful, that it's visual, and that people don't need to read a lot to see where the hazards potentially lie. But you're absolutely right, Pippa. The actual when the public are near the water, and that's, it's that key time where they're not expecting to even go in, that we need to raise the awareness of the potential hidden hazards, and that's through social media and with our partners in Water Safety Scotland. It's making sure they're aware that the water's cold all year round, that there is sudden drops very close to shore, that even going in over your knees could end up you getting into trouble quite quickly. One more step and you could go from 2 foot of water to 20 foot of water. And it's making sure people who are using the lochs for the activities like paddleboarding and open water swimming, that they do it with someone else, that they're not alone and they have the correct PPE or they have buoyancy aids on board. And they're very visual in the water, because it's not just about those hidden hazards. Even when people are out, they need to be visible, so that, you know, there's a lot of people using the water at the same time, a lot of conflict there as well. But also being, trying to raise awareness of them being prepared before they even come out. So checking the weather. It can change very quickly in inland waters as well as the coast. So it's understanding where the winds are coming from, the direction. And if there's any local bylaws, then they can at least look at some signage and see the signage is very, very consistent with the RNLI on the coast around the national park. And that's what we've tried to instill as a consistency amongst the partners. And it's really working extremely well.
No, I mean, I think, you know, obviously we've worked a lot on some of that, and people are perhaps, I think, caught out because it seems like them, you know, there's a lot of attention on wild swimming and those things, and you see the nice pictures, but actually some of those people are really skilled and experienced, and they go out with a lot of safety training, and as you say, somebody might think they're a strong swimmer, but if it suddenly drops off, you get really cold, you get disorientated, and then you don't, you were a few feet away from being able to put your feet down. Suddenly it can all change really quickly.
That's right. And that's the type, and this is where we have a suite of aerial photographs. That's our seasonal campaign, our seasonal posters that we put up at quite a lot of the access points to water around Loch Lomond and the other lochs within the national park, that emphasize that shallow water, which is lighter in color, and then the dark area, which is very close to shore. Even sometimes it's only like a metre and a half, so it's not the same as a gradient and a beach on the coast. It's very sudden and very cold, as you said. Just the top few inches can seem very warm, but actually just a foot under or a foot and a half under is extremely cold, and that can affect your body rapidly. And even an experienced swimmer, even somebody very experienced falling in off a stand-up paddleboard or a canoe or a kayak, I've done it myself, and that shock is it's very intense, and you need to be able to be calm to deal with that. And so somebody that's maybe not as experienced would suffer there and potentially get into trouble.
And I think I'm right in saying the advice, if you do get into difficulty, try and get on your back, float, stay as calm as you possibly can.
Absolutely. And this is something that, again, that consistent approach from RNLI, Water Safety Scotland and all the emergency services to use the Float to Live campaign. So we encourage people, it's linked from our website and obviously to Water Safety Scotland's website, that the Float to Live from RNLI is a fantastic campaign, showing people exactly how to do it. I mean, I teach my daughter when we go swimming and she's in the pool and it's like, look how good my starfish is. And it's that, you know, keeping your legs very wide and your arms way out and just trying to keep your head above water to keep that breathing very, very calm. And it does work. It does work. But it's when you're practicing it, when you're not in that situation, it's trying to remember to remain calm in that situation. And for anybody that's seeing somebody in difficulty in the water, it's to call 99 straight away for them not to go into the water and try and help. I know that's difficult. It's very difficult when it's somebody that you might know, but you're putting yourself in danger. And actually the best thing to do is communicate from land, to relax on your back, float to live, try and keep that wide arms wide and legs wide, and keep the neck above water so that you can keep the breathing. And that is the best advice that you can give someone. And then obviously what you're doing is phoning 999 and asking for the police, who coordinate all inland rescues. So if there's obviously public rescue equipment nearby, then we would encourage them to use that. And we've been doing a lot with Water Safety Scotland in terms of helping some of our local businesses and stakeholders by we've got rangers who are trained to deliver the waterside responder training, and that's been a very been a big success. A lot of our stakeholders and businesses, local businesses, have signed up to that. So giving them just a little bit more confidence in helping in those rescues, but keeping themselves safe, but absolutely doing everything they can to get that person the best help.
No, really good advice. Absolutely good advice. Don't get in and put you both at risk. Get help.
Yeah.
And Gordon, one of the other biggies is sort of responsible camping as well. So I know you've put various measures in and you do all the prep for that one. So also, we always encourage people just to be a responsible camper in terms of how they turn up and just how they use the park.
Yes, you know, there's so many different users and messaging to those different users. But yeah, the camping sites is obviously something we've had in place now for 6 years, mm-hmm. 5-6 years, where we introduced in the places that were really intensively used for camping. And again, the common theme here, close to water, nice pitches, close to water, by a roadside. And, you know, the combination of overuse and mixed in with irresponsible behaviour, we felt we had to intervene in that. And so we've created camping bylaws in these areas, and they are, it's not across the park, it's just these lochside strips that have been really heavily used over the years, where we're still providing camping experiences. So that in some places we've built low-key campsites, those are mainly in the Trossachs, but also providing camping permit areas. And what that does is it allows us to make sure the amount of camping is kind of in balance with the sites, and obviously remembering that other people want to use these areas as well as campers. But also the permit system means that people have to give their details when they're buying a permit. And for us, that there's a bit of regulation of people's behaviour there as well. And we have used the permit system. So we've improved the situation, but we still have situations where people have just abandoned a campsite. They've caused damage, etc. So we do issue things like fly tipping fines for that, because it is fly tipping in scale when you see a big abandoned campsite with everything left behind and irresponsible littering and toileting and the whole thing. So there's teeth there that we don't use very often, but it's important, like many of these things, that people know that, then they do think a bit about it. It's not a place where you can just, you know, not consider the environment or other people. So the user feedback for that, we have online sort of response surveys, is phenomenal, because people know when they come, they know they'll get a spot, and two, they know it's well managed, and you know, the satisfaction rates are always in the high 90s. So that's what it's about, and it's about families and, you know, younger people coming out to enjoy these areas where in the past it was probably a bit too intimidating. So yeah, I think there's that management side that I suppose the bit to emphasise and we're particularly focused on just now and can happen with camping, and not just camping, is fire lighting. And we too often see people that they've had fires, but they haven't properly put them out when they've left the site. Where we are just now with an extreme high fire risk is we're asking people to just not light fires and to not, you know, have disposable barbecues, because again, we've had litter bins go on fire as well as other things. So people just leaving a disposable barbecue and it's still very hot, it's not gone out. I think people have seen the devastation that out of control wildfire causes, and we must do all we can to stop that. So we're just appealing to people to just think about it. It is often when people are camping that they'll want to have a fire. So for now, we're saying just let's not do that.
No, I think it's people perhaps don't appreciate how dry the surrounding area is and how fast that can take hold. And we were going to have the fire rescue service here talking about water safety, but they're out tackling fires. So, you know, that's case in point where that's taken a lot of people to deal with an issue, and they're not there then to deal with anything else that might happen, you know, in somebody's home or property and things as a result of that. And I mean, Gordon, we work together quite a lot, and people might think it's sort of summer and things, but we spend almost all year looking at how we manage these things, planning how we'll deal with them, and that balance that you've kind of touched on of how is protecting nature, how do we look after the people that live in the park and the businesses and things. So all of that has to be able to exist in balance, really, doesn't it? That's one of the challenges with the popularity of the park.
Obviously we engage heavily with communities, business groups, landowners, and obviously people have slightly different takes, as you might expect, and obviously some communities, and obviously the Gael Park, the park loss is probably the classic, where there are people living right in amongst the destination that is attracting high volumes of people. So, you know, we obviously want people to come and enjoy the national park, but they also have to remember, you know, obviously be responsible and think about the environment, but also think about the people that are living there too. And you know, that's something that we try and build into a lot of our messaging as well. I think it's also, you know, we've got really good groups. We've got last summer, we've got a West North Lomond visitor management group. We've got a business group in Arica and Tarbert looking at the issues there. So, you know, getting lots of inputs and ideas from all those stakeholders. And then obviously there's partner organisations such as yourself. And I think so the council, Police Scotland, Forest and Land Scotland obviously run a lot of visitor sites in the National Park, Transport Scotland. So there's a lot of partners that we bring together to sort of tackle the multitude of issues. So whether it's traffic, littering, preventing antisocial behaviour, and so on, it's trying to come up with an integrated response. And I think the pandemic did do a lot in terms of bringing together, you know, we called it a sort of safe reopening plan, and it is become a joint response group that continues to work and meet and to share information and share priorities to this day. And it's an excellent piece of partnership working, because it's not just about plans, it's actually about the way we work and sharing deployment plans and being able to share information in real time during a busy weekend or a busy period about where things are happening and who needs to respond. So it's really, really valued as a way that we're all pulling on the resources that we have and targeting them on the right thing. So that's you know, I think it's a model that others would be very happy to try and deliver in other parts of Scotland.
Yeah. And I mean, I know it's, you know, some of the stuff's been challenging, but actually that work we do together with yourselves and the community to tackle hotspots like Luss and look at how we manage litter and look at how we manage parking and all of those things. And we're constantly, every year we go back to that and seeing how we can improve it. And I suppose from an Ungar point of view, we would absolutely encourage people think about some of the other ways into the park that maybe not the most obvious. So you can get public transport in via Dunoon. You can pick up active travel routes, goes into much less used parts of the park, but equally beautiful up Loch Eck and Puck's Glen and all of those bits. Is perhaps think about the bits of the park that perhaps are less busy, and you might get a better experience.
That's right. And we use a lot of, you know, we obviously there's a sensitivity that we don't promote areas that we know are going to be busy anyway. And so we have run some campaigns to actually draw people's attention to less visited areas. So we do that quite consistently, but also, you know, it's actually about how we build the infrastructure in the right place that actually helps with that as well. And again, we're working with yourselves and others about how we strategically invest across all the sites that we manage as well. So obviously, you know, the council is looking at the Cobbler car park for toilets and improvements there. We've got big plans coming forward for Tarbert as a major kind of reworking of the site to try and accommodate different users, camper vans, day visitors, coaches, people accessing the water and so on. So, you know, that's really important that there's actually investments that can help with some of these issues and help take the pressure off some of the areas that just can't cope with the volume.
That probably leads us nicely on to your current consultation on your new park plan, Gordon.
Yeah.
What keen.
Yeah. Got a copy right here.
Well prepared.
Yes. So, yeah, no, it's thank you for doing this just now, because we're in the middle of a consultation on our new National Park Partnership Plan. And you know, the word partnership, obviously, we're talking to colleagues like yourselves because it's the plan for the place, not just the park authority. And I suppose this plan is probably the one that has been the most I don't know if I'd call it radical, but we're really having to think about the future in it, in the context of the climate and nature crises. I think it's tried to translate some of the things we hear about as national targets about being a net zero nation by 2045. And obviously now the nature crisis is sort of taking prominence as well. And trying to look at, well, what does that mean in a place like a national park? So we've done quite a lot of work to look at, well, what are the things that we could tackle locally that will contribute to that national target? And also remembering these changes are already happening. We're already seeing, obviously, you know, severe weather events. Obviously, our Gowls, the connections into our Gowl are affected by more and more regular landslips. Yep. With temperatures rising, we're seeing issues with water quality. We spoke about more wildfire risk earlier. So all of these things are happening already. And what can we do now to play a role in trying to minimise that temperature rise, and at the same time, you know, really do more meaningful restoration of nature as well? So that's pretty much the driving force of the plan. And also the important third bit is, you know, what does that mean for the economy, and how, you know, again, the phrase just transition to a greener economy, what are the opportunities for an area like the national park in that? So the plan has, you know, we've got suggestions of targets around land use change. You know, obviously trees absorb carbon. We've got eroded peatlands that are emitting carbon just now. So we've got targets around that. As I mentioned earlier, the biggest emissions in the park, we have a model telling us now where all the emissions are coming from in the park. And as you might expect, transport's right up there and growing. So again, in the plan, we're sort of saying, look, there's another reason to look at transport. It isn't just about congestion and visitor management. It's actually about, if we've got a target to reduce car journeys and transport emissions, then leisure journeys are a really big part of that. That's the reason people are going to still want to have a car and obviously travel long distances by car. So working with partners like the local transport authorities, regional transport partnerships, to say, you know, we need better rural transport anyway, but actually if we get this right, it can contribute, because remembering a lot of people are coming from urban areas to come out and visit the park. So transport's a big area. And then, you know, just in terms of how we're looking at the land economy, if there's more woodland and land use change happening, where are the rural jobs in that, as well as in things like tourism and transport? Because transport can be an economic driver as well. And it obviously affects people being able to stay more locally as well, if they can access work and services too. So that whole how do we help people live sustainably in the park, as well as a part of the plan too. So that's a very high level sort of overview. But, you know, what we do, I think the key thing is what we do over the next 5 years up to 2030 is pretty key to what happens to, you know, as we look towards 2045, as if we're going to sort of reach these targets. So that's what the plan's very focused on. What are the things we need to prioritise to really make those changes start to happen?
You've done pretty well to sum it up quite so succinctly, Gordon.
I've had practice.
There's a lot of issues in there. So if people are, I mean, I definitely want to encourage people to submit their views. So if they want to, put their views into your consultation, or even if they're visiting the park and they want to find out more information, where can they go and find out all the relevant information?
Yeah, so we've got many ways for people to contribute. So on our website, walshloman-trossachs.org, if you type in future, that will take you to our sort of park plan homepage, and people can choose if they just want to make a single comment. They can do their sort of short survey stuff. There's a map that you can actually just say, there's an issue in this part of the park I want to say something about. Or you can dig deeper, read the plan, and obviously there's structured ways to actually comment on specific parts of the plan as well. So there's a whole range of things there. There's also, we've been running webinars and things like that. So if you've missed those, we can actually, we have actually put the recordings on the site as well. So there's ways to sort of view some of the sessions that we've been having as well. And we will, you know, our staff, as you've heard, we've got lots of staff out in the park and volunteers as well. So they're all well briefed. We have some materials there that people can engage with for people to find out more as well, because it's as much about people visiting the park as it is about people who live and work in the park as well.
Right. And Lee, where can they get information about how to be a good visitor?
Sorry, we accidentally muted you there.
I was trying to mute. Sorry, Pippa, yeah, that was my fault. Again, I'm failing miserably today.
No, you're not. So where can they find out more information on how to be a good visitor, Lee, and where to book camp spots and all of that sort of thing if they want to come and visit?
Well, if they've not got enough amazing advice from the Ranger Service on patrol, then we can guide them to our website. There's fantastic information on the website, and it's quite easy to navigate around in terms of how to book. And all the advice is there on what to do before you come and while you're there. So there's plenty of advice in terms of responsible behaviour, obviously fire advice that we've talked about. But there's terms and conditions as well for these areas where you can come and camp, whether they're in the camping management zone, as Gordon said earlier, we manage that area a bit more to make sure that the area can thrive and it can regenerate easily enough. Whereas before the camping management bylaws came in to play, we saw quite a lot of those areas decimated by people cutting down trees and not allowing it to regenerate. So, the rangers, when they're out and about, are really encouraging people to visit the website for information that they might not be aware of. And all the links that go from our dedicated water safety page or to our partners. But in terms of the consultation period, we really are encouraging and visitors to have their say. I've been doing a lot of work with our Loch Lomond stakeholders and ensuring that they have a voice to record onto this consultation platform, because it is everybody's national park, and you know we want to hear from everybody, so that if we've missed anything, we can say, well, okay, you've managed to record that, and actually see that visual, you know, difference that we're driving that to a 2030-2035 target, but actually and beyond. And I think that's the key. It's not just this target, it's beyond, it's for forever.
And I think the thing we're saying is this is not the National Park Authority can't tackle this alone. It's about everybody. And so the strap line we're using for the campaign is here, now, and all of us, that if we're not going to tackle the nature and climate crisis in a national park, where are we going to do it? And if we don't move now, you know, it's going to be too late, and it needs everybody to play their part and to think about how they can change to a more sort of sustainable approach to living, working and enjoying the park.
Absolutely. I mean, we want it to be as wonderful in the future, if not better, than it is now, and not to lose such a fantastic natural asset. So I think strong message, go to the website, whether you're visiting or whether you're thinking about visiting or whether it's just for the consultation. Lots of good stuff there that people should check out if they're thinking about coming to the park at some point.
I forgot to say the consultation closes on the 19th of July as well. And then we'll look at what everyone's have got to say and finalise the plan and towards the end of the year.
And I think it's also worth saying that people are making differences to they're changing their behaviour. We've seen a notable increase in people when fires, not just now because the fire risk is too severe, but when there is a time where the weather permits that you can have fires, and they are bringing fire pits. They're not scorching the ground. They are raising them off the ground and being more responsible, bringing their own firewood. So there is a change in behaviour, and people understand that that is technically damaging the environment, and they don't want to do the wrong thing. And it is always a bit, a ranger's role is to educate, and quite often, 9 times out of 10, people are welcome of that advice. They are keen to do the right thing, and they'll go away quite happy in that knowledge that the next time they come, they're going to do it even better. So we are seeing a change in behaviour, and that's all contributing to our future nature targets. But also, as I say, I mean, it doesn't stop here. Even when the consultation finishes, rangers will still engage and still encourage that best behaviour, and thinking about what impact they have, however small it might be, collectively, it has a massive impact. So we will continue that drive from our side of things.
No, I think that's important. And hopefully people are coming and enjoying the time in the park, especially in this wonderful weather. And if they are engaging with rangers or any of the staff that work from all the organisations that operate in the park, they're trying to help. You have a great visitor experience. So please be nice to them, say hi and have a chat, and they're there to help. So hope people have fun visiting.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Enjoy the park and come back.
Hopefully that's given you just a little insight into what goes on in the park, particularly over the summer period. If you're thinking of visiting the park and want to find out more information about how to visit safely and responsibly, or how to get involved with the National Park and work with the team there, or to contribute to the consultation, which is still open until the 19th of July, go and check out their website by searching Loch Lomond and the Trossachs National Park.
Pippa's Podcast.